Janitor at a college, but sometimes I feel that I'm smarter than the students who go there. I often solve equations, and they're like, that's the plot of Good Will Hunting. No, it's not. Anyway, so my best friend's Ben Affleck. So fucking good.
Well, I'm glad your best friend is Ben Affleck, because cheers. We've got a heavy dose of Ben Affleck this week for you, and Danny, my only question for you is, how do you like them apples?
Gone. I hate apples.
Gone apples. Less thrilling sequel. Welcome back, folks. It's Movies for When. Your revenge is... Whoa. Lightning just almost hit Denny's house.
Right when Greg said revenge, my room, like, lightning lit up like a scary movie. Like, I wish there was a score for that moment. It was right on revenge. It was so cool.
Writing a note to myself to add the musical sting later. Okay, so anyway, Movies for When, your dish is best served cold. We are continuing our theme on revenge movies. And I have asked Denny how he liked them apples, and he doesn't like them at all. But I made him watch a movie anyways as an act of revenge, and also an olive branch, because I thought he might like the movie. We're here, of course, with Ben Affleck as Denny's best friend. We're going to be talking about Gone Girl. Yeah. Thrill of time. Thanks, David Fincher. Denny, how are you, man? You were my plan for the intro was to do a Good Will Hunting reference, and you just like led us there anyways, so that's peak synergy right there.
I wasn't yes anding yet. I didn't know we were doing the intro. I hope I didn't shut it down.
Oh no, you're perfect. You're doing
okay,
great.
Cool.
Yeah. I was gonna
perfect. It's Black Swan, ladies and gentlemen.
You don't understand how good it worked. That's all I'm saying to you.
Aw, thanks. Cool.
Hell yeah. Well, Gone Girl is on the docket, folks. We're going to be talking about that in a little bit. But first, I got to ask Denny one thing. One more thing. Sorry. What else did you watch this week, brother?
I actually watched a good amount, Greg.
I know, for context, folks, this week was since Friday, so...
It's currently Monday, yes.
In the 2 days that you had to watch stuff, how much did you truly watch? I'm curious.
Actually, a lot, and I'm not even going to include the wrestling. Which, believe me, was like, you know, at least an LOTR extended edition worth of content.
More on that
regular
later.
Weekend. I watched I Broke a Rule, Greg. You asked me how I've been. I said I could have said I've been better. So I watched my favorite movie outside of October. I watched Beetlejuice, and boy, did it hit just right. I watched it on Saturday morning. We ordered breakfast in and just had Beetlejuice and brunch, and it was awesome. It was just what I needed.
That's the B&B I'm looking for. Bed and breakfast, forget about it. I want Beetlejuice and brunch.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Honestly, I would like that to be a regular tradition, or perhaps our next live show.
Ooh, I don't know if I can wake up for that, but bottomless mimosas.
I'm going to have to be up before 10 a.m. for that on a Saturday. Yeah, fucking right.
Next you're going to tell me I have to drive somewhere.
There'll probably never be another live show, guys. we peaked early. Yeah, I would love to cover Beetlejuice again one day, because I don't remember our discussion of it at all, because I was going through an insane period of my life when we recorded that episode. But yeah, I watched The Bride of Frankenstein, because Vanessa had never seen it. I know I watched it kind of recently, but Vanessa and I are getting some tattoo ideas together around The Bride, and I felt like Vanessa needed to see that. I have complex feelings on The Bride of Frankenstein. As a horror comedy, I love it. As a as a gay-coded piece of cinema. I love it. As a sequel to one of my favorite movies ever, Frankenstein, I don't like some of the creative choices made by Mr. James Whale. Although I think he's an astounding filmmaker. So astounding that I watched his 1932 feature, The Old Dark House, also nice. Starring Boris Karloff, who was basically Frankenstein with a drinking problem. The Old Dark House was pretty cool. It honestly was a good bridge between Frankenstein and The Bride of Frankenstein. Like, it has some, like, melodrama to it, but not outright, like, comedy like in Bride, you know? But it's still, there's some ha-ha-ha, but also a little authentic spooky to it, which I thought was pretty cool. I'd recommend The Old Dark House to nerds like me. But my favorite thing I watched, Greg, on Easter Sunday, I went to the Alamo Drafthouse showing of Harvey. Have you ever heard of the movie Harvey?
No. Well, let me check and make sure I haven't. 1950s Harvey. No, I have not.
Yes, it is a 1950 film starring James Stewart. Wait, is it James Stewart?
It is.
I believe it's James Stewart. Yes. Also the star of Alfred Hitchcock's Vertigo, and most famously, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
He plays a man who is a drunk who is seeing a 6'3½ tall rabbit named Harvey. And this is the story of his life as it revolves around that. And it is cool as fuck, and I loved it, and it's hilarious, and it's prescient, and it's profound. I was a crazy big fan of this Harvey movie. I want to, like, talk about some of the themes and some of the big moments that stuck with me, but it would feel like stolen valor, you know? I would feel like I was just doing something the movie earned. Needless to say, I would love to cover it sometime on the podcast. I highly recommend watching Harvey. It is both a, like, lighthearted comedy and a pretty dope think piece.
We'll do it for when we cover... We'll do a theme movies for when you want to watch the good version of Donnie Darko or something like that.
Lawful good Donnie Darko.
The lawful good Donnie Darko. Nice. All right. Yeah.
Awesome. And that's my watch list, Greg. What have you watched?
That's a pretty solid list. No, I really like that. I'm interested in Harvey for sure. I'd like to see some more good James Stewart films. Hell yeah. Rain's coming down. Fingers crossed we don't lose power while recording. So, what I watched, I only had one movie and one show because we only had 2 days between recordings. The movie I watched, a John Hamm feature that came out a couple years ago that I think is very overlooked on Paramount Plus. Confess, Fletch. Good fucking movie. It's pretty low budget, but just John Hamm vehicles. Just he's the character of Fletch. I think it used to be a show or another movie with where
Fletch
Chevy Chase
is like a Chevy Chase movie. Yeah, I've seen.
Yeah, that. Movie. Right.
It's okay. Like, okay. I was gonna make a joke. Is it in the Fletch universe? But yes, it is.
Yes,
for
it
real.
Is.
Okay. I assumed they weren't related. Yeah. Okay. Never mind. Two on the nose.
But it is exactly that, and it was way funnier than I expected to be. It seemed like maybe the main difference between, because I haven't seen the Chevy Chase one, maybe the main difference is that all the people in the movie seem to really enjoy working with John Hamm, so
nice.
Maybe that'll be the core difference between the two films.
I will say, like, the worst part of Fletch is that it, like, really aggrandizes Chevy Chase. Like, it's like the character is, like, annoyingly Boy Scoutish and just always good, but I will say it has charm of, like, it's not like you're gonna be in stitches laughing, but it has that, like, my dad and my uncle would have said this was the funniest movie ever made kind of vibe to it, you know? Like, there's, so it's like, it's not like distasteful to watch, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, I got is that level of charm you're talking about, that is what I got out of this movie. It was just a charming, fun time. Who knew that John Hamm could be this enjoyable? Like, a man who's clearly super charming, what if we put him in a movie where he's funny and charming? What do you know? An enjoyable watch. Who would have thought? Yeah, we need to, maybe we should be doing that more. But yeah, it was a cool little movie. Just a whole lot of actors that pop in and you're like, oh, I know them. I know her. She's in this stuff. It's great. Speaking of stuff that has a bunch of actors pop in that have you snapping your fingers a la DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and saying, I know them. Just like the meme, you know? My wife and I have been watching, and we just finished the second season right before we started recording, The Good Wife. Also on Paramount. We are exercising our Paramount Plus subscription. Wink. And yeah, it's a good show. She watched it when she was living back at home, and we're watching it in Spanish for her, but she's put on English subtitles for me. Cool. It's very nice, which makes it very funny because this is a show, it's already like a pretty good show, lawyer kind of show if you didn't know about it, but like it just seems like every actor you've ever heard of is showing up for at least one or two episodes. And there's a recurring character played by Michael J. Fox. You've got America Ferrera. We just finished up a story arc with her. Alan Cumming's in it. And it's Sarah Silverman was just in an episode. There's just like all kinds of people. If you just go to the IMDb page and just scroll down, you're going to recognize a bajillion names. And it's going to be a good time for you. But the funny thing is, since we are watching it in Spanish, these known to me actors are being dubbed in Spanish, and it's really funny comparing like what I know their real voices to be like and seeing how good the voice actor is doing with their voice. The one for America Ferrera, pretty good. Let's just say who was it? The one from Michael J. Fox actually wasn't bad, but there's some pretty rough ones in there. Sarah Silverman's not great. So that's what I watched. Yeah. What's up?
I actually did watch the first episode of The Good Wife for my TV screenwriting class like a decade ago. And it was really good. And it was so good that it had themes of PTSD and war and torture, and I never watched it anymore, but I always joked with myself. It was like, God, I left it on such a cliffhanger. Is she a good wife? The first episode just leaves you wondering.
Oh, will they ever solve that mystery? I don't know. Spoilers in the title, but maybe that's a red herring, you know?
Yeah. Kind of like Cats. Totally spoils the whole movie, and also, I don't know that I'd call any of those things cats.
It both does and doesn't spoil the film. What a shitty movie. Anyways, Denny. I was going to say, speaking of shitty movies, but we got the opposite here. We're here to discuss a movie I really like. Thank you for letting me do this to you. Gone Girl. Gone Girl, Denny. Gone Girl. From 2014, from our guy, David Fincher. Wow. The director. You can watch Gone Girl. I think it's pretty much just a Prime rental or whatever. Apple TV rental, whatever you've got to pay some money. Or you can watch my special edition Blu-ray that comes with a copy of a book in the Amazing Amy series, which is pretty fun.
So, oh, that's kind of cool.
That's my physical media flex for the week.
Nice.
Hell yeah. All right, Denny. I'll hit you with the review of the week real quick. And this user gave it an 8 out of 10, and they said, Fincher is back to form with a surreal look at society's obsession with true crime and missing white woman syndrome. Trent Reznor's score is particularly amazing. It adds a Lynch-like aura of dread to the film. The dark and yet almost comical tone of this was very hard to nail down, and the score really brings everything together. Rosamund Pike is also truly frightening as the sociopathic mirror image of the modern Western woman and is a great contrast to Affleck's naive average Joe. Episode over. That really like kind of covered everything for me, but the alternative critical review of the week was that cat has absolutely no idea what the fuck just happened. So hell yeah. Denny, what is... I know your relationship with Gone Girl, but I'm going to go ahead and ask as is customary. What's your relationship with Gone Girl?
I don't think I have one. Have I said something about it before?
No, the answer is you've never seen it before.
No, yeah. No, never seen it. Never really thought much of it.
Oh, okay. Well, shit, you've seen it now. My relationship with the movie is a much longer one. Like I mentioned last episode, it's a very Greg movie. I watched this when I was living in Portland. It came in theaters. The person I was with at the time, we were both very into Fincher movies. We just loved Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and we were excited for Gone Girl. Didn't really know anything about it. We went and saw it opening weekend, and, well, first thing, I got carded to watch it. I got ID'd for an R-rated movie, despite being clearly 24. That was extra confusing for me, so... Very funny times. But we watched it. It blew our minds. And we watched it again the next day, but took like another friend, a couple of friends. There were a couple that we took them with us. And the theater experience of watching Gone Girl with when you've seen it, but a full audience, a full room of an audience that hasn't seen it, is one of my top in theater experiences ever. That was the atmosphere of the room. You just felt as things progressed in the movie. You just kind of like feel the room around you just shift. It's a thrilling experience, and like hearing the reactions to certain parts is holy crap, man. What a picture, that's all I'll say. This is probably like my eighth time watching it, all that to say. And that's it. Yeah.
Nice.
All right, Denny, I hope I'm two for two on movies I picked for us. What did you think of Gone Girl, kind of in general?
I am so excited to hear what you love about it and focus on your love for something and see what you find beautiful about it. Because expressing negativity is so safe, and we like to be vulnerable on this podcast. This is a feelings podcast. Greg, my friend, my brother, it is clear that this is not only a great movie in your mind, but an emotionally significant movie to you. Why don't we focus on that today?
Well, part of being vulnerable is, you know, you can express the negativity too. That's not off limits.
Greg, I hated this movie. Like,
Oh my god.
I thought it sucked, man. Like, I legitimately wondered if you were pranking me or if it was like you were showing me revenge in the form of like you hated this movie and so you wanted me to suffer. Like, I legitimately wondered that. I really didn't like Gone Girl, not even a little, but I don't really want to focus on that. I want to celebrate your love of Gone Girl.
Well, this was going to go one of two ways. Either you would really like it and we would just have a good time chatting about it, or you would dislike it and I would say the revenge is complete. So I think either way I was going to come out on top. That's my feelings on it. Anyways, I don't know. I'm not going to monologue the whole time about it, but what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, for what it's worth, like... you know, like, we always talk about, like, what's a Greg movie and what's a Denny movie. Like, I would say a Greg movie is not a movie I wouldn't like, but just, like, something that Greg would watch that I wouldn't. Like, but even, like, ones we, like we reference as a joke, like, On Sunday all the time. Like, I thought On Sunday was a fucking fantastic movie. Like, I've pretty much loved every movie you've shown me that was, like, ah... you're going to watch a Greg movie this time. And so, like, this is not a pattern at all. I usually love the stuff you show me. Man, Gone Girl was just not it for me, man. It did not hit at all. This is an American Psycho all over again situation. Like, I was thinking of, like, I was thinking of your reaction to your own, like, negativity, which, like, I didn't view as negativity on that episode, but you, like... you were like, ah, that really wasn't, like, the energy I want to put out there. And I was like, nah, I don't think it's that bad, man. And I was like, man, that's gonna be me, and I don't want that to be what this is about after hearing how you teed up this discussion, man. Like, I mean it. Like, let's talk about what you love about it.
Okay. Yeah. No Patrick Bateman. It's not incomprehensible to me that someone or even you would have a lot of issue with the movie or just like dislike it completely. I'm assuming beginning to end. This movie's a wild ride, and I thought at least you would participate, like, the progression of storytelling. That's something that, for whatever reason, you and I have been harping on or, like, really taking note of in the movies that we've been watching.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know. I don't know where to start. The rain is picking up as I continue to conceal my emotions, so... Oh man, yeah. My wife specifically does not want to watch the movie. She did not want to watch it with me. She really likes David Fincher movies. Like every time we watch one, she like loved Zodiac, for example. Which mm-hmm. That's the Fincher movie you should see. She's probably like most people are just like, I don't want to watch Ben Affleck. Like, you don't understand, the casting of Ben Affleck is perfect for this. He's an asshole, and the character is an asshole, and it just works. It's in his bones.
Yeah, you're not supposed to be this kind of guy. Ben Affleck in this movie, yeah,
it's a character where you're like, this guy is clearly a prick to some degree, and then as things go along, I guess I'll give the whiplash warning. If you haven't seen it, just go ahead and see it, because we're going to spoil the shit out of it, and half the fun for this movie for me was learning things as we go along. But yeah, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed the movie. Ben Affleck's character, Nick, is clearly a massive douchebag, but you never quite get this sense that he's somebody that would actually kill his wife. You're like, yeah, this
sure.
guy's an asshole.
Oh, no,
but
sure, yeah.
I don't think he's a murderer. Did that reveal land for you, that he was, in fact, being framed by his wife for her, quote, murder?
No, like, because like, I feel like so much of the movie, at least up until that point, like, we saw so much of it from his perspective, and I feel like we kind of knew what he knew, and we had a pretty privileged look into, like, his world, and I just feel like he'd been doing stuff that wouldn't make sense. You know, like I got it that he was a piece of shit, and like he, like I saw his disingenuousness of like he wants to look like he loved his wife for ultimately financial gain. You know, like, but again, it's the layers of morality. You know, that's not the same as murdering someone. You know, like there's degrees of shit. So yeah, I definitely felt like I was on team. He's being framed, but he's also a piece of shit. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess you maybe felt that a little sooner than others, but yeah.
Well, I've seen Old Boy.
You know, like... Oh, yeah. Damn. That's a movie we should have done. Nah, I'm just kidding. We already did that one. So I think our audience would hate us if we did Old Boy twice.
The MVP 2 of 2024.
That's right. Yeah, I don't really know exactly where to go with this. I don't know. This is kind of tough now. It's hard to gush without being teed up for it. So,
what did you expect me to like? What were your hopes?
I mentioned the storytelling, certainly the filmmaking, the pacing of everything. There's maybe some like shock scenes towards the end with like Neil Patrick Harris's character that like still are absolutely like, I've never seen a more effective like murder scene in a movie. That part freaks me out. Just the swelling score. I thought you would appreciate the score of the movie. I think this has an excellent soundtrack. I don't know what I expected Denny to really like about it though, if that makes sense. Maybe just the whole thing. But if you like, if you're not on board with the story as a whole, I don't see you being in on pretty much anything that's going on, which is the stuff I'm really appreciating about the film, I guess.
I think you've, like, correctly diagnosed my issue, honestly. Like, it was, I really struggled with the buy-in to into what was going on. I felt like it wanted, like, heist movie levels of buy-in. Like, I felt like I was watching Rosamund Pike do this, like, reveal after reveal after reveal, and also that she was this, like, perfect, flawless human.
I don't think she's projecting that at all or trying to convey that. I think she tried her best to make it work. Like, she was, you know, that's the whole thing with the children's book. It's just like, every time I fucked up, my parents wrote a story about this fantasy girl doing well in that exact same thing. So she's trying to, like, perfect herself or find something in her life to go perfectly, but it's just, this is one failed more miserably than most, I guess I would say. And that kind of pushed her over the edge.
I more meant her precision and the faking of her death and kidnapping and all that. Like, I was like, dude, you're like a whole Ocean's 13 team of people pulling this off.
Well, that's, her arrogance only gets her so far. Because she's kind of arrogant. She's hasn't been out in the world in the shit, so she's just like, well, I have money. She's always had money, so her, like, existing in a world with regular people backfires in her face immediately. Like, she gets fucking beat up and robbed the second she, you know, goes out to lay low, and her entire plan falls apart. So she had this whole plan figured out, and she's like, the whole thing is her being an unreliable narrator, and she's so sure and confident in her plan, it does feel like she's Danny Ocean, but, you know, she's the whole, yeah, like you said, the whole Ocean's 8, but in one person. But she finds out that that's not the case. That's not how life goes. That's, you know, her cushy privilege, I guess, doesn't allow that to happen. I'm kind of spitballing here. Maybe that's not the case, but
I will say, dude, I zoned out for parts of this movie. Like, it's like, dude, it was boring to me. Like, I was so not interested. Like, and I was not buying what it was selling. And, like, 80% of it is, like, in the dark. Like, they're not lit.
Mm.
Like, they're like, the gaffer is, like, sick, and they just shot anyways. It drove me insane, Craig.
Maybe this works better in the theater. I don't know. Yeah, I'd have a hard time calling a Fincher film flawed in terms of camera work and that kind of thing. It doesn't happen a lot. Dark, for sure. I mean, look at his movies. It's just like, it's always at night and not always very well lit. So,
but I mean, his movies, like, serve well lit in the theater. Like, in ways that obscured the characters' faces unintentionally.
Yeah, like, or intentionally. Like, there's a lot of scenes where people are in a room, but only the kitchen light's on, but the camera's in the living room, so you see, like, just, like, a soft backlight outlining their face every once in a while. So I know what you mean there. I think it looks good. I'm not gonna say it doesn't look good. Danny doesn't like the dark, I guess.
I love the dark. I hate the light.
Oh, damn.
I don't like the dim.
Oh, okay. Now you're talking sense. Oh, man. I guess I'll go to the performances. Some that I found surprisingly good, and some that I found maybe not so good. One of the surprisingly goods, Tyler Perry. That guy came in. Steals the damn show.
I saw his name in the opening credits, and I was like, someone had a fucking point to prove with this casting. Like, he's not going to be the Tyler Perry I expect. You know, like, Madea is not going to show up in this movie. Like, I knew we were going to get, like, an Adam Sandler and Uncut Gems type of situation. I as soon as I saw his name, I was like, no fucking way. All right, let's go.
I'd say we got that in spades.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah.
He was awesome in this movie. And the first time I saw it, too, I was like, really, Tyler Perry? What the... What can he do? This is what he can do. And I'm so glad they stuck with him for this movie. The other person I liked a lot, Kim Dickens, who played the lead detective. I thought she was an absolute A+.
There's something about that drawl, and it's the Jodie Foster drawl in Silence of the Lambs. Yeah, and it's one of the characters is doing something similar in Drive Away Dolls recently, and there's something about that particular drawl that seems very put on to me. You know, like I've lived in Texas my whole life, which I understand isn't like the South, but I mean, like, I've met people from Georgia, I've met people from Louisiana, you know, like I know what accents sound like, and that one is just like uncanny, that like it's just off to me. It's like no one actually talks like that.
Yeah, it's like Northern South. This is St. Louis accent. Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious if, you know, how accurate it is, because I don't really know a lot of people from Missouri, so I can't speak to the accuracy of the accent, but I really liked her a lot as a character, I would say.
No, I'd agree with you on that, yeah. She was a good detective. I mistakenly thought it was Paget Brewster at first. I was fucking Frankie Dart from Community.
Oh, okay. Yeah, nice. No, not even. Definitely not that. I think the one performance I kind of had an issue with was Carrie Coon, who played the sister. It's a lot of awkward line deliveries, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. But she could emote very well, but I think some of the line delivery there for humor didn't always land for me, I guess. And that's just my opinion. What did you think of Ben Affleck's wiener?
Worth every penny. Price of admission earned, you know, right there. I don't think we see enough wieners in cinema, to be honest with you, Greg. And wieners are one of the funniest looking things that can ruin any serious scene. And I think we should be doing it more often.
a real icebreaker, like really break up the tension, just show a wiener for like a split second, blink and you miss it kind of thing. It can't be like fully on there and pronounced, but it can just come and go.
I think we've seen a certain percentage of Hollywood female actors' breast. Equality wise we should see that percentage of Hollywood male actors' penises.
I will co-sign that.
The ratio is off, Greg.
Yeah, it's got...
And I'm not accepting no Hollywood fake, whatever the male version of a Merkin is. I forgot.
Okay. Oh, man. I'm sorry. I know you want the real deal.
Yeah. I want the dangle. Daddy-o.
That's the Denny's plea for authenticity in the Wings and Cinema. I appreciate that.
Sincere wieners in my movies, not ironic wieners. Schindler's Willis style wieners.
Anyways, I'm not allowing this to continue. My other favorite casting choice, the cat.
Yeah,
the cat rocked. David Fincher said that was his favorite animal he's ever worked with, I'm pretty sure. Could basically just put that cat in a corner, he'll just sit there hanging out looking around for however long the scene is you need to shoot. He'll always be game to just hang out.
Cool.
Good cat. Oh man. So I don't know. I was I didn't take a lot of notes because once again I was more immersed in the movie. So I don't really have a lot more talking points. We've covered genitalia, we've covered performances, we've covered cinematography, basically, with you and I disagreeing about how it's lit. I would say very well. You say very dimly. I get that. I don't know, a very blue-looking movie.
Dabba D.
This is your blue ruin, I guess. Baba D, Baba Die. Oh, man. So, yeah. Revenge thrillers, Denny. I'm sputtering here, man. What do you got?
Did you think the girl was really gone when you first watched?
That's the name of the movie. I thought something was fishy.
No. What would you say is the most emotionally resonant moment of the movie for you?
Emotionally resonant. It's less about, like, obviously, like, it's not like connecting with characters or anything of that nature. It's more like, damn, I just watched something absolutely unbelievable, and it's got to be when Desi Collins gets his neck slashed. You can't deny the intensity of that scene. It's Dude. Just... Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's... You kind of see it coming. There's building to it and giving you clues that it'll happen. But when it actually does happen, you can't believe how gruesome it is. Or how much they're showing. Or how long it keeps going.
Because it's not that kind of movie up until that point, right? And that's what makes it so powerful.
Yeah, this... I will say this is Fincher's maybe funniest movie since Fight Club. It definitely has the most, like, attempts at humor, or, like, it has the most comedic tone, I would say, right up until that point. And it just really hits you out of left field. So I think that's the most impactful moment, you know, just watching the movie. And that's the thing I expected the least. You know, you start seeing the little segments where it looks like she's going to be framing him, or sorry, she's like performing for the security cameras in his house, and you're like, okay, she's plotting something, she's up to something here. I didn't have murder on the list of things that were going to happen next. I was just expecting escape and blame him for something, but. It's like that old boyfriend said, she graduated from being raped to being murdered, and then she graduated from being murdered to murdering.
Man.
So, what's in store for our girl next? Our amazing Amy.
Where would you rank that kill scene among horror kill scenes you've watched at my behest?
Oh, man. Probably right near the top. I don't know. It's kind of hard to compare, or like to put it into that bucket, I guess. Because, like, I'm expecting a murder in a horror movie, you know?
Sure.
Or like even with Blue Ruin, you know, I know I'm watching a thriller. I know there's going to be some violence involved and some people are going to die. I think I would still put it really high, just like filmmaking wise, with the score and like the cutting to black and then cutting back, just the amount of blood, but like the emotional impact of just how sudden that feels, I think would kind of push it to the top for me. I would have to do some digging on the movies we watched to see like what were my favorite kill scenes. That's in a horror movie, when there's a kill that I like, I have a smile on my face. In this movie, my jaw's on the floor. So there's a big difference there, I think.
That's fair. It makes sense that that's what I'd be like inquisitive about, because I was like really bored, but like the blood brought me back around. I was like, ooh, hold up, something cool's happening here. Hey, where were you back 2 hours ago, Neil Patrick Harris getting shanked in the jugular?
You should have led with that, guys.
Nice.
What did
I
you
like
think?
Him. What can I say?
I like him. What did you think of Amy's motivation to do this stuff? Do you believe that we are shown enough to believe that this is her getting pushed over the edge, or that she's, you know, driven mad by like whatever life circumstance, whether it be her upbringing and then her marriage with Nick? Do you find her carrying out this plan to be a believable thing for this character to be doing?
So that was an issue I had. Short answer, no. I didn't find it a believable thing for the character to be doing. And my reasoning behind that is, like, I saw that they backed her into a corner. I saw that they drove her mad. I saw that they put a lot of pressure on her. It was just hard for me to believe there was no other way. You know what I'm saying? Like, this was an extreme solution. This was some mm-hmm. fucking Shawshank Redemption ass problem solving. I just found it hard to believe that, like, she couldn't find another avenue to advocate for herself. And, you know, like, I honestly didn't care enough to, like, really pitch other things. I was just like, it seems like there's choices she could have made. I don't know, man. It was extreme. It was an extreme thing that it wanted me to believe would happen, and I had trouble believing it would.
Yeah, exactly. And it's... I would agree with that. I think my response is, I guess I don't really give a shit. I think it's a cool story to tell, however motivated. The lack of believable motivation doesn't really, like, take me out of the movie, I guess I would say. Mm-hmm. But I would understand someone having an issue with that, or, like, having that take you out of the movie a little bit. So I think my... some of the story issues that I do have are kind of the next step in that line of thought, where we have this unreliable narrator, where everything we've kind of learned about their marriage in the first hour plus is blurred once the turn happens. Mm-hmm. We get fed a lot of information that is shown to be, like, you know, these parts are true. The early part of their relationship is true. And then we kind of start fabricating abuse, physical, and arguments about kids and all that kind of thing. Where that leaves me is kind of confused with what the last 2 or 3 years actually were like for them as a couple. And that's where I'm getting lost on the motivation for her. Because what we're shown, we're told, is not true. And then Ben Affleck's kind of bumbling around with the police, like, yeah, I don't know what she does all day. I don't know if she has any friends. It seems like he doesn't know enough about her to really speak to what their relationship has been like.
Mm-hmm.
So we have an unreliable narrator and then an oblivious narrator, and kind of that gap between their meeting, her realizing the affair, what kind of goes on in the last couple years to kind of lead to the affair in the first place, and also, like, the fallout from that. I wish I had seen more of what these two were like in the 2 years prior to, you know, when we start watching. And that's just a little bit of a gap for me, so.
Yeah. And I think, like, honestly, as you were describing that, I think I was, like, I was piecing together, like, why I had trouble asking these questions that you're asking, even, honestly. And I think it's because, like, I have a lot of trouble with characters who live dishonest lives. You know, like, and rooting for them. And if someone is, like, voluntarily consenting to a fake life, I don't know what to tell them. You know, like, when they have mm-hmm. problems, you know, like, I'm like, well, maybe if you'd been a little more honest and upfront about who you are and what you want, you wouldn't find yourself in situations like this, but that's therapy you needed 15 years ago. You know, like, it's just, I just view them as, like, the source of their own problems, and so it's hard for me to root for them. And as you were describing, like, the tangled web between both of these characters, I was like, yeah, I think I just got vibes that they're both, like, super fucked up rich fake people, and that's, like, my least favorite genre of person. Unless they're on White Lotus, there's an exception to every rule. But
that's right. It's like you're not supposed to be sympathetic towards either character. I don't know. It's
Who am I supposed to root for? What am I supposed to root for? Even like I'll root for a concept. It doesn't have to be a character.
I think like you're not maybe not rooting for someone. This is, you know, kind of the whole thing with the talk show with the blonde lady on the fake news channel, whatever her name was. I can't remember her name. Dang it. Anyways, it's kind of the whole thing with her. We're just spectators to the mess. It feels like we're watching reality TV from inside the house, basically. That's kind of what this movie feels like to me. And if that's kind of the statement of the movie, is like, man, people are pieces of shit, and once you get up close, it's even worse than you realize. The whole image of Nick and Amy, if we were, you know, people existing in this universe watching on TV, we would feel compassion for Amy. And, you know, once Amy returns, well, hold on. The average American.
I ain't no fucking mark for that Christopher Robin shit.
I think my thoughts on this are twofold. That I understand the general American public being on the side of one person, and this movie is kind of saying like, it's two sides to every story. Whatever. Maybe people are more fucked up than you think. But also, could be seen as a statement on like America's obsession with like true crime, and then especially like, the white blonde woman is missing. Let's get every task force imaginable for this. And it's,
well, that's just a universal monster movie.
Go on.
Why wasn't anyone in a spooky costume for Gone Girl? I think that would have helped my buy-in. Like, if one of them was like Dracula, you know?
Go watch Renfield. If that's your, if that's what you want to do,
I will.
Okay, have fun. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. I think it all boils down to, I enjoy reality TV, and I don't think Denny does.
Oh no, not at all. I hate reality TV.
Maybe that's where like the core of the disagreement here kind of is.
Do you
enjoy watching a mess?
No, and I'm realizing how much this movie brings up for me as a child of divorce, and some would say a high conflict divorce, as we're now talking about it. And I'm realizing I learned to see through this bullshit on both sides a long fucking time ago, and that's how I became a goddamn therapist. I'm too woke for this movie, Greg.
Oh,
Rosamund
no.
Pike, Ben Affleck, your voodoo doesn't work on me. I see the truth the whole time. Neither of you is the hero.
The woke mob has corrupted Denny. He has the woke mind virus. Oh no.
Woke therapy. It turns your kids non-binary.
More power to you then.
Every day I get a check for reporting a new non-binary kid. This is
from
a
the
joke
woke mob.
For when eventually the Inquisition happens. this is for humor, entertainment, just like Fox News.
Denny's not actually getting checks from the woke mob. Please.
I'm not actually getting checks from anyone. This podcast is bullshit. Like, all show, no business, baby.
Hell yeah, that's what we rely on.
I watched Gone Girl for free because Greg wanted me to.
Greg made me.
You know what? Take me in the Inquisition. I deserve it.
At what point would you have turned it off if you were just like happened upon the movie?
I would have never turned it on. Wouldn't have happened upon it. Like, not anywhere near my algorithm. Like,
oh shit, damn.
There's no way I would have watched this.
Okay. It's...
And I don't turn movies off when I turn them on.
Oh, Denny, God bless you. I have never walked out of a movie in the movie theater, not even once.
I can think of a few that I did. Bicentennial Man, and Are We Done Yet, starring Ice Cube. I also stopped watching Malignant But I was really sick and in a bad mood. I actually want to watch Malignant again. Other than that, I don't stop shit once I start it.
Interesting. I thought you really didn't like that movie.
I watched like 20 minutes, and I remember like Vanessa was out of town. I was sick. A couple of people had told me that I would love it. And I just remember looking around and being like, there's like 2 hours. No one in this house is enjoying this. Like, there's no one else to watch it for. I'm sick. I'm in a bad mood. I could watch anything I want. But then everyone told me, like, oh, no, you're, like, supposed to feel that way for the first 20 minutes, but it turns into something amazing. And enough people have told me that I believe it. It's just, like, it's just not a high priority, but I would watch it again. I would.
It's like, do I really want to rewatch those first 20 minutes?
Yeah.
To get through it. Yeah, I understand. Well, respect, I appreciate you sitting through this one for me. It was my revenge is complete. I think we're square now, and that's all I could hope for.
Absolutely, sir. I certainly think if we were gonna keep score, I think I've asked a lot more of you than you have of me in the history of this podcast. I'm happy to throw you a gun, girl, when you need it, my guy. You just say the word. It's all yours.
All right. Tune in next week for Gone Girl again. No, Greg, no. I would never tune in next week for Five Rooms. So I don't really have any closing thoughts on the movie. This is going to be a pretty short episode, I guess. We have a lot to get into next week that I guess we can cover after gimmicks.
Ayo.
If you would like to kick us off with some gimmicks. We've got another cold dish to give more to. Danny, what is your coldest dish for Gone Girl?
Obviously, my coldest dish was Dreyer's ice cream with the logo facing the camera. Just kidding. Boy, when I'm having a cold dish at Gone Girl, I sure want a cold dish of Dreyer's ice cream with Neil Patrick Harris. No, the coldest dish was making me watch this movie. Bravo, Greg. Four Rooms was short. I didn't deserve this.
Well, so will this episode be, I
Two
guess.
And a half fucking hours. Jesus.
When we first started this theme, you texted me that we were going... that. You asked what the gimmick was, and I said coldest dish open to interpretation, and you said something to the effect of, I hope somebody like eats ice cream or something so I can do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, just you wait. And you fucking did it. You did it. I knew you would do it.
You were teeing me up for that?
Yes.
No way.
If you go back, I think I say something to the effect of, you just wait or something like that.
Yeah, this movie had a lot of product placement in it, but the ice cream was strong.
I love Sony products. How about you?
Boy, do I.
That's a Fincher staple. It's like Red Apple cigarettes, but Sony products. There's a lot of them. Especially in Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. There's a bunch of that there. My coldest dish. I'll stick more to the spirit of the theme, but it is also a cold dish. A glass of Mountain Dew filled with spit.
Ew.
Called,
you just ruined my sip of Diet Coke I took for me.
I promise it's safe. No one did anything to it.
Oh my god, it is like, I have to throw the whole thing away now. Fuck.
Oh no, sensory issues, no. I've incepted sensory issues into your head.
new cup,
new class. Only I touch. Yeah, I get that. Yeah, like in the middle of her revenge plot, she performs an act of micro revenge, and I'm absolutely here for it. Danny, what's your favorite line from Gone Girl?
I've got to give a runner up to the Neil Patrick Harris product placement mixtape. Music, satellite, internet, Netflix, Roku. Obviously, that's straight up direct quote from the movie.
Yeah,
music,
Roku.
Satellite, internet, Netflix, Roku. Obviously,
Roku, internet. Obviously, yeah.
No, my favorite line was Roku. Unit production manager David Nitz. because it was the first line of the credits, and it meant the movie was over. I hated this fucking movie so much, Greg. I did not enjoy this viewing experience at all, and I could barely find it in me to pay attention. It was fucking grating.
Very well. My favorite line... I'll just let that slide. My favorite line was from Ben Affleck to his recently... returned wife after she just committed one of the most shocking acts of murder I've ever seen on a movie screen. You fucking bitch. When I tell you that audience was in an uproar in the theater. They loved it. All right. I'm almost afraid to ask, Denny, but what'd you give this one for a critic score?
19 out of 50.
Okay, a little bit higher than I expected.
Turn the lights on and you would have got a 20. I was going to give it a 20, but I was like, God damn it. Like, they were unlit for like 70% of the fucking movie. I had to take it down to 19.
Did you watch it during the daytime?
No.
Okay, I know you wouldn't have.
I watched Beetlejuice during the daytime. I know how that can fuck with a movie, Greg.
I'm not letting that happen. Oh, man. Yeah, well. We tried. It is a higher score than I would have expected out of you. But
what'd you give it?
I gave it a 38 out of 40.
Damn, I didn't know you loved it that much. Hot damn.
I enjoy the hell out of this movie. It's just a thrilling experience from start to finish. And damn, this came out almost right at 10 years ago. This would have been, I think, summer 2014. Who's to say? I'm to say. Google's to say. This doesn't matter, but I'm gonna look at it anyways. It's October. Whatever. We're almost at 10 years. I'm glad I'm still enjoying this movie as much as I am. I just want to find somebody else that likes it too. My wife was a no, and Denny is also on record now as being a no. So
let's see. I got Dylan Derryberry penciled in as a maybe. Let's see what he says.
Fingers crossed, you might be replaced. So yeah. Me and Dylan can do the rest of Fincher's filmography, because I don't think you're going to like some of the other stuff that he's got to present. So,
well, I do like that Fight Club was a like cool movie about nonconformity, you know? Like, that's probably my favorite thing Fincher ever did, you know, about how Fight Club is just like about going your own way and like not listening to society. That's probably my favorite contribution of him to that. I couldn't keep it up.
I was going to build on that and say I just love the exploration of like what masculinity should be about. So.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mhm.
One of the all-timer dude rock movies.
Yeah. This is a real good piece of cinema highlighting brotherhood.
Yeah.
If I've ever seen it. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway.
Anyways.
The reason I vote Republican is because of how cool Fight Club is what I was trying to say.
Jeez Louise, this guy understands cinema.
When the Inquisition happens, you heard it on the air. I'm a Republican who misunderstands Fight Club. I'm going on record for the Inquisition.
That Venn diagram's a circle. So, Denny, we're done with Gone Girl, but we're not done with this theme. By the time this episode comes out, we will have a poll out and presumably completely voted on.
Let's hope so.
Let's hope so. Yeah, Denny, what are we doing next week?
Well, we're going to continue our revenge theme with movies that star members of the roster of the acclaimed Nintendo 64 video game WCW NWO Revenge, because it's WrestleMania week, baby! Woo-hoo. And on the poll, we are going to have They Live, starring Roddy Piper. Up for a twofer. Hell Comes to Frogtown, also starring Roddy Piper. Waterboy, starring the Giant, a.k.a. the Big Show, is Captain Insano. Spider-Man, starring Macho Man Randy Savage as Bonesaw McGraw, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze, starring Big Sexy Kevin Nash as Super Shredder, Wrestling with Shadows, starring Bret Hart. When the Republican Inquisition happens, I think Bret screwed Bret. Yeah, totally. We should totally watch Wrestling with Shadows. And finally, starring pretty much the entire roster of the game, the movie that got David Arquette his WCW championship, Ready to Rumble!
I don't know which one of those I want to win.
It's the most random poll we've ever had.
I said I wanted full explanations on the post, but now I kind of want it out of context. See if anyone can guess. See if anyone can guess what connects these movies. With the hint being maybe the week. Don't say WrestleMania week. Just say
Sports Entertainia week.
Oh. I can't wait to watch another sports entertainment film with you, Denny. Yeah, all that being said, next week will be a lot more joyful given the selection of movies we've got here. I don't know about the documentary one, but Ninja Turtles for sure.
Yeah.
We'll see. More on that. By the time this comes out, like I said, the poll will be up. So, all right, Denny. We survived a lightning storm. We didn't lose any power. We have disagreed for the second time this season, like the fourth time on the podcast period. So I'm ready to close this one out and we can continue this. We can restart our streak of shared positivity for movies. For
women. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, on our way out, you can take a... I'll be like Rosamund Pike. I'll take a nice bump here. She was really getting hit, by the way. Holy shit, she was awesome.
Yeah.
She got her head smashed into the wall. It was crazy. Brother. She really did that. I'll take the bump here. From the top rope, just nail me with your heaviest catchphrase. SummerSlam me, Denny.
For Greg Work, the yes officer, Brett screwed Brett Johnson. I'm Denny, the yes officer, Brett screwed. I can't do it! Vince screwed Brett! It's my last words! Taylor, this has been Movies for When! We already told you when! But you know what we didn't tell you? What's my cage again?